So my name is Rami Sayar. I am a technical evangelist at Microsoft Canada, and I will be talking to you guys about JavaScript debugging, this very exotic topic. We're going to be slowly exploring these uncharted territories. We're going to discover dragons. We're going to slay those dragons. All right, and finally, we're going to put something on the map so that we know what's actually there. No longer will we see here be dragons on maps. We will know that that's actually how we do JavaScript debugging. So out of curiosity, any of you guys heard this expression before, here be dragons? Maybe seen it in some code bases? Okay, I see a bunch of hands going up. So for those of you who aren't aware, in the old days, they used to actually write here be dragons and put like pictures of dragons for places that were unexplored. And what I've discovered over the past year or so is that JavaScript debugging, this whole topic, has been something that hasn't been truly deeply explored. So by the end of today, hopefully, there will no longer be this gap in your map of the JavaScript ecosystem. So on the agenda today is the types of errors that you might encounter in JavaScript, frequent locations of these errors as well, so where do we actually find them, how to debug and use some of the introspection tools that are built in both in the browser and in Node.js, and then I'm going to show you how to do remote debugging of Node processes. These are processes that might have been running in production, but for some reason are erroring out, so I'll actually show you how to be able to debug them right away. And then finally, I'll show you this really, really cool thing that helps you remote debug browsers. That's right, other people's browsers straight from your machine. So that's what's on the agenda for today, and hopefully by the end of this, you will know a lot more about JavaScript debugging. So about myself, thanks for the introduction, Jeremy. I am based out of Montreal, so if you're curious about how I look without a beard, that's pretty much it, hence why I have a beard now. The best way to reach out to me is actually through Twitter, and part of my job is to work with startups, developers, medium, small-sized companies that are building any type of technology that's web or open source. So if you have any trouble with Node.js, JavaScript, Edge, our new browser, or anything, feel free to reach out to me, even if it is not Microsoft-related technology. It's just anything JavaScript and open source, I'll be happy to help out. And Twitter is the best way to do that. So how many of you guys have experienced this? There was a very enthusiastic yes right away. Yes! me, yes! So that's pretty much how I feel every single time that I do like any type of work with JavaScript. It's like this language just wants to make it more painful every time. Like, the more time you spend with it, the more you want to cry. Like, instead of being sad grumpy cat, like, if it was me, like, in this same picture, you'd just be seeing me crying instead. So it really feels sometimes that every time that you squash a bug, you end up with 26 or 28 more. So that's something that I really connect with when it comes to JavaScript. But hopefully by the end of today, it will happen less often. So if we talk about errors and where they occur, before we sort of talk about where they occur, let's actually sort of categorize these types of errors that you might encounter. JavaScript is notorious because there are so many like types that you can get. For example, you could just not be loading the JavaScript file, and all of a sudden, another JavaScript file that's expecting some variable somewhere or some function somewhere just doesn't know what to do. So loading errors are something that happen fairly frequently, whether it's because the syntax is incorrect, so the JavaScript file never loaded properly, whether there is minification errors, for some reason the minifiers just sort of broke halfway through and then outputted only half of your file, or sometimes it's network-related errors where I can't even get the file. And then sometimes it's just missing files. It was just never copied. You know, so I don't know about you, but I've sort of lived through a bunch of these errors in my lifetime. Another type of error that we'll see quite frequently in JavaScript is runtime errors. So think of syntax errors. Again, if you didn't realize or notice, you can actually get syntax errors both while you're loading a JavaScript file and while you're running it. Yay! Not very nice. You could be facing misspelled variables, right? That's something that happens quite a bit using JUquery instead of jQuery. Illegal assignment, assigning variables or whatever to things that you can't or should not be assigning to. Variables in classes that don't exist. You can sort of bundle these errors up as like runtime errors, things that happen when the file has magically made it to where it's supposed to be and it's running. Now, the types of errors that I will focus most on today are logic errors. And I'll show you tools to debug errors that are happening because just the code is not correct. All right. So, and these could be errors due to formatting, like we're using the wrong parameters. So JavaScript is not very type safe. You could just be passing in the wrong things around. The tools that I will show you will mostly help you fix errors that sort of fit in that category. I'm not going to be showing you debugging, like network debugging tools. I'm not going to be showing you like how to properly set up your minifier. I'll be focusing instead on sort of logic errors that you might be facing in your JavaScript application. Now, the nice thing about JavaScript is that it's sort of everywhere now. It's something that like is amazing for JavaScript developers. You no longer have to learn a whole other language to do some of the stuff that you had to do before. So today, you saw IoT, for example. You saw Matthew Potter, who is in the room somewhere, showing us how to use JavaScript to sort of power his IoT devices. Now, the other thing that you've seen also today is that you could use JavaScript on both the back end and the front end. So not only now can you have errors that sort of sit on your client side, so errors there, you can also have errors that sit here on the back end. And then because JavaScript is so popular and so prevalent now, you can even have it sitting there in your database side. So if you're building a classical web application and you're using JavaScript everywhere, which you should be doing because it helps you reduce the amount of code that you have to write, all right, you'll also be basically having errors that are JavaScript errors everywhere as well. Now, the other thing that I like to highlight is that JSON has become the dominant formatting that you use to send data around, right? So JSON also has its own syntax, yes, and there are some ways that in some places, JSON is a little bit more permissive than in others, but JSON could also be something that is causing errors everywhere. So it could be here, it could be there. Pretty much, now that we have JavaScript everywhere, we also have the ability to make JavaScript bugs everywhere. Isn't that fabulous, guys? Yes, it is. I see people chuckling because it's true. So JavaScript errors, you shall not pass. All right. Hopefully, by the end of today, you shall not pass. But really, I have a feeling that this will always happen, something like this. I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, by the way, in case it hasn't popped up yet. So the thing that I'm going to start with is walking you through some of the debugging introspection tools. Now, just to get a feel for the crowd, how many of you guys are mostly building JavaScript on the front end? Raise your hand. Okay. And how many of you guys are also building JavaScript for the back end? Raise your hand. Not as much. Okay, so I'll focus a little bit more time on the front end side of things, but I will still show you the back end as well. I don't want some people to feel left out. But let's first start talking about the debugging introspection tools. So now before I sort of jump into this, let's think about the typical logic errors that you might write with JavaScript. One that's really, really common, I think it's probably like, I don't have any statistics or anything, but my opinion would probably, I would probably say that this is the cause of maybe 70% of all errors in your code, and that's using this, the actual this in your code, wrong. That typically ends up having lots of scoping errors, and that's because JavaScript has a very interesting scoping system, but that has been improved on, at least can be improved on, in ECMAScript 6. Which Ahmed, a speaker coming up, he'll actually show you. So using this wrong is probably the cause of most errors. The other thing that you typically might end up doing in JavaScript, simply because it's very possible, is accidentally creating memory leaks. How many of you guys have actually done that? I have. If you use jQuery and delete and add things quite a bit with events, you are probably doing this, you just don't know it. Ha-ha! And I'll show you tools how to spot those errors as well. Incorrect coercion, comparisons, and equality. JavaScript has this funny syntax for everybody who didn't learn how to code with JavaScript first, like this triple equal sign syntax. And that's because in JavaScript, you can actually sort of coerce and change types around really easily. But a lot of people now have sort of these checks to make sure that their code is always running with triple equal sign, because typically you want to do that. The other thing that I see quite frequently is sort of incorrect references to instance objects and prototypical inheritance errors. That's a lot of very technical words, but basically it means not understanding how the prototype object system in JavaScript runs and how it works. But there's always so much more ways that we can cause errors in JavaScript, right? But those are generally the typical ones that you might encounter. Now, what debugging and introspection tools let you do, okay, is they actually allow you to control the execution of your code and walk through line by line. So you can debug as well with breakpoints. So you can say, hey, break on this line of code. I don't have to walk through every single line. I can just set breakpoints. I can examine the call stack. I can pause on exceptions. I can do stack trace exceptions. So I can see like where in the stack trace this exception might have come up from. And really, they're extremely powerful tools. So let me actually show you a couple. The thing that I'm going to do right now is I'm actually going to cause a memory leak. Yes, I'm going to cause a memory leak. Okay. So I'm actually going to cause a memory leak. Now, I'm going to show you the code. It's actually really simple. This is all of the code. I start a div, and I add some HTML to it, which is just basically this long text. You can just assume that it could have been AJAX loaded. And then I add an event handler. An empty event handler does nothing. And then I append this to some type of other div. All right, and then after maybe, I don't know, 30 seconds, but in my code sample, I do it right away, I sort of just eliminate whatever I just added in this div. All right, this sounds like something that is reasonable, right? Like, how many of you guys actually are loading data through AJAX and then adding it to some div and adding some event handler, right? And then at some point, probably clearing it away, right? If you do this enough times with large enough data, you actually cause a memory leak. Is anyone shocked, or people are just quiet? They're like, what? That's a memory leak? What? Okay, well, it actually does. So I'm actually going to show you the introspection tools that we can use. And the reason why this actually causes a memory leak is due to the way that the jQuery cache works. So if you're using jQuery to do any of this stuff, which probably 99% of you are doing, simply because jQuery is now like a default in every single website, you're actually causing an error, memory leak, because the event handler references an element, so both the handler and the element stay in memory for the entire closer. So long as that code is in some part of the application that's active, it's actually going to stay there even if you delete the element from the HTML. The jQuery cache will keep it. And this is a memory leak that happens on every single browser. It's not just Edge that I'm using to demo right now. So let's say that I open up the debugging introspection tool. You're wondering, okay, well, what is all these magical tools that he keeps talking about? So here's what they look like. If you press F12 or go to the DevTools on most browsers, you'll end up with something that looks roughly the same thing. You'll have a DOM Explorer that sort of lets you go through the elements that are in your page. So in my case, I can actually see like when these things are being added. All right. It also has a console, typically, that will let you see the errors that took place, if there were any. And then the debugger is where things get interesting. So the debugger explains it's what lets you sort of walk through your code, set exceptions, read the stack trace for your exceptions. It's where you can see what the values of some variables are. So let me just show you an example of me running this. Okay, so I'm actually going to open all of this wonderful stuff, go into my memory leak file, so you see how I can filter through things here as well as actually browse through the file that I'm hosting. I can see the code that's in this page. So because my JavaScript is actually all sitting in the same file, all right, I can actually see it right here. Typically, you want to separate your JavaScript from your HTML, but for this simple example, it's all in here. Okay, I can set a breakpoint. All right, so I've set a breakpoint there. And now every time I click this button, all this button does is just run this line of code right here that you saw over here 1,000 times, actually 10,000 times. Right, so if I actually run this, it should open up the debugger, okay, and it shows me this, this is referring to. So if you're wondering when I said most errors are because people are using this wrong, in this case, it's actually pointing to a button element. What? So that's so with the watches, you can actually see like the locals, what the disk is referring to. You can see I as well, so how many times that I've, like what the value of this I is, which I'm using basically to run this loop. Okay, although this loop is just running one time. Okay, I can actually change it to run 1,000 times. To actually continue execution, I have the continue button, or I can jump line by line, all right? And that shows you what's happening with the code as well. Now, the nice thing is that I can actually set some variables to be watched constantly, so I can say that I is always watched, all right? But the nice thing is I can even modify this and say, hey, only watch this if it's equal to something, like if it's equal to 10, all right? So it'll tell me if it's false or true. You guys can see this clearly? Yes? Okay, great. So that's what the watches will let you do. The call stack shows you where you are in your code. Now, the nice thing about specifically the browser that I'm using is that you can set it to just debug only my code. So if you're using jQuery, for example, instead of having it show you the entire call stack, by setting the debug only my code, you only see your code. And then for all the library code that's minified, you actually just see library code instead. So you're not, your stack trace is not polluted with other things. Now, if I run this, it's only going to run once. It's actually not going to do very much. But let's say I edit it, okay, and I would need to do that from here to actually run a lot. Let me show you what happens to the memory. So if I refresh here, and I've removed my breakpoint, so everything should load. Fabulous. If I go into my memory, and just to prove to you that this is actually a memory leak, let's see what happens. Oh, what's going on here? Oh, look at that. Half a meg? What? Half a gig? And you see the garbage collector is actually doing work, right? It's actually like freeing some memory, but because the closure is there, it's keeping basically this memory, even if the garbage collector is actually running. So that's why you see the spikes and the downs. All right, so let's say that I stop profiling, okay? Perhaps I want to actually like see and compare, right? So if I start profiling, it's still running. Obviously, I caused my browser to crash because it's now consuming about 2 gigs of my memory. Maybe I should not have put so many high numbers here. Okay, we will save this and do it again after I kill my browser. Okay, so my file is back. I'm going to open up F12 again, go into my memory tools, okay? Here is where things get more fun. I'm going to press start, okay? I'm going to run this 1,000 times. It's going to create a lot of memory, and eventually it's going to stop because I wasn't foolish enough this time to have it go forever. Okay, you can stop now. You see, even just running this, how much? 1,000 times causes a lot of errors. But here we are. Okay, so we're back to being stable now. So we're about 1 gig of memory usage. Now, the nice thing with the tools is that I can actually take a heap snapshot. So this will keep a copy of my heap. So I'm going to minimize this console here so that you can see it. Now, let's say that I do this again, but this time, instead of having the snapshot after I'm done, I'm also going to take it in the beginning. So let's refresh. Okay. Maybe I will close and open again just to lose my data. Awesome. Cool. Open F12. Go in here. I'm going to start profiling, but I'm going to take a snapshot right away. And then I'm going to run this. So it's going to cause a lot of errors. So if I go over here, a lot of memory. It's taking up memory. It's going to stop around roughly 1 gigabyte. Great. Okay, there we go. If I take another snapshot, all right, now I can actually see the differences. All right. So what's nice is that I've taken two snapshots, and just to show you, let's say that I'll notice that, okay, the heap size has roughly changed and the objects has roughly changed, but the memory are being consumed like is quite significant. I can actually explore what's happening here. So you can see the difference, most of the difference comes from this having this mouse event prototype. Huh, I wonder why, okay? It's because this click event has never been deregistered. So this function closure sort of exists for a long time. So from there, I can sort of figure out, okay, what are the types of things that are mostly being retained after all of my memory cleaning has been done. All right, so that's part of the debugging tools and introspection tools that you find in your browser. And typically, all browsers will have a type of tool like this. All right, the other thing that you can find also with your debugging tools is basically this incredible network tab that tells you when things are not loading or when things are taking forever to load. So here we have this wonderful tool that basically tells me, okay, Bootstrap was loaded, hence why you see that this is pretty nice. jQuery tried to do something, but it took forever and then returned to 404 because it couldn't find it. We had our other Bootstrap files and our Prettify CSS files. This essentially lets you filter by content type, so you could be looking for documents, style sheets, whatever your JavaScript files are loading, including AJAX requests that you might be doing. Okay, they will actually be... you're able to debug them and see if they were received, if there was any type of errors, okay? What were some of the requests, the headers that were sent? What was the body that was sent? What was the request body? In our case, there was none, but what was the response body? Any parameters, any cookies that were sent with it, and stuff like that. So that's roughly a tour of the debugging and introspection tools that you'll find in your browser. Now that we've seen what they look like in our browser, if I am a Node developer, I also sort of want this in my Node app, right? Who wants this in their Node app? Okay. I love the three people who raised their hand. Thank you. So debugging Node apps. How do you guys typically debug Node apps right now? Scream it out. Console.log. I see a lot of people shaking their heads. Yeah. So basically, debugging tools for Node haven't been really existed is the wrong word. They've been there since the beginning. But really, they haven't been very prevalent, I guess, is the word that I'm looking for. So there's a couple of tools that you can use today. One of them is called Node Inspector. And what Node Inspector does is it basically gives you the same dev tools that you have in your browser. So it's similar to the tools that I just demoed right now. But it sets it up for your Node apps. So you get the same features, like breakpoints, stepping over, stepping in, seeing the stack and everything, but for your Node app. Now, the nice thing about Node Inspector is it also uses WebSockets. So when you're debugging things, you actually see things quite quickly. And that's between the server, the Node server itself, and the dev tools. And the other thing that you could do with it is use it for remote debugging. Haha, and I'll show you how to do that. And edit live running code. So let me do a quick demo of Node Inspector. What I've done is quite simple. I've created a sample Express app. Okay, and I already have Node Inspector installed. So you guys can see this, right? Is that legible for most of you, or should I zoom in? So I'm just sitting in this very simple Express app. It looks very familiar. I've got an app.js file. That's all great. To run Inspector, all I need to do is actually just run node debug app.js. And what that will do is tell me that it doesn't recognize it, because I have done the silly thing of upgrading my node packages, and all of a sudden, I lost my node inspector. So hopefully the Wi-Fi will work really quickly. This actually happens quite a bit. So every time you upgrade Node, for some reason, things sometimes disappear. It should just take a couple of seconds, though. All right. Okay, well, in the meantime, while it's running, let me talk to you about another way that you can debug your Node apps, and that's using some of the IDEs. Now, there's plenty of IDEs that you could use. Most of them are free. Some of them are not. The one that I like the most is actually Visual Studio Code. And it's this free tool that works on all the platforms, macOS, Linux, Windows, whatever it is. And it works really well with Node. So here I have the same Express file and the same wonderful stuff, the same folder, literally the same folder. Okay. And for me to actually debug this, this app.js file, well, if you use the Express generator, it actually creates a www file. If you've ever used that. So for me to actually debug this, all I would have to do is tell it to launch this, basically this bin www file. And immediately, it opens up the debugger. It's now running. If I go into my browser, and I go just to double check, yes, it is running. Now, the nice thing about using these debug tools is you pretty much get roughly the same thing. If you go, let's say that I wanted to go into my index.js, this is the file that sort of renders my home page, and I want to set a breakpoint. I can easily just set a breakpoint, and the next time I refresh this page, it will actually halt execution right here. Now, if I check my debug panel, I get literally the same stuff that I get in my browser. I get my local variables, the scripts. I can set some variables to be watched. I can see the call stack. I can tell it to catch all exceptions. I can move to the next line. I can restart, stop, and then just tell it to keep executing all of the code straight from my actual IDE running Node. Now, this seems fairly obvious, right? But perhaps it would be more fun to instead remote debug things that are running in production, right? Who has ever had to debug things in production? Some people raise their hands. Basically this, right? Like, I don't always test my code, but when I do it in production. If you're a cowboy programmer, like me sometimes, I will end up having to test things that are running in production. So the nice thing is that you can actually debug production Node applications. Now, debugging Node is easy if you already know that you want to debug it. It gets hard when you didn't know that you wanted to debug that application, right? Because all of a sudden, you actually have to connect to it, and it's already running, and you have to set the debug flags to make it work. So I will actually show you how to do that. Let's say that I had this running on Linux. The first thing that I would need to do is actually get the process ID of my Node server, and then from there, use the kill command. How many of you guys are familiar with the kill command? All right. Normally, use it to kill things, right? Yeah. Well, in this case, we're not doing that. We're actually sending a signal. And this is a special signal, 234, that basically turns on the debug flags in Node. Okay. Now, Windows doesn't quite have the same kill command, right? But you can actually do it by executing this simple line of code that says debug process and passing it the process ID in Node. You'll be able to get my slides online. They're actually already online if you want to get them. But let's actually do this. So instead of running my application with Visual Studio Code, I'm going to turn this off. Okay. I'm just going to run this on some command line. Right? It could be anywhere, right? That actually doesn't need to be sitting on my local machine. That's what's really powerful about this, is that you can debug things that are sitting on a server somewhere, remote. Okay, sitting in my Sample Express app. I'm just going to go node bin ww. Should run. And the answer is yes. Awesome. So let's say that I did this, okay? This could be, it doesn't have to be on my local machine. It could be something sitting on a server somewhere. Let's open up another command prompt. Just put it up here on the side next to each other. Sorry for if the text is skewed. That's the projector, not me. Let's say that I have this app running, and I want to get the process ID. So I can actually use this task list, okay? And if I paste this in here, it's going to fail because, no, it didn't fail. I thought it would fail because of the quotes. They're quite different. I can find the process ID. Most likely, it's this guy that's consuming all the memory. So it's probably 54, 56. If not, then it's probably this other one. Now I can tell it to debug, okay? So this line can be edited to add the actual line of my PID. Now if all goes well, okay, it actually, I don't think it is 5456. That's my other node process. I believe it's 1912. It says starting debugger agent. Okay, guys, you're supposed to be shocked here. I actually turned on the debug flags of a running Node application. Isn't this awesome? Yeah. All right. Oh, okay, sweet. So now the nice thing is that once it's the debug flags that are turned on, I can use anything. I could use my Node inspector that should be finished now but is not, and that's okay. The Node inspector to debug this remote application, or I could tell Visual Studio Code to attach to it. Right? So if I go attach, what it does is it say, hey, connect to some address at this port. This is the default Node debugger port. The minute I run attach, I can actually start debugging this file. Okay? So if I went back in here and added a breakpoint, this is literally the file that I just attached to. Okay, if I go back into my browser and I refresh, it will break here, in theory. There we are. Yeah! See, the nice thing about doing live demos is that they don't always work on the first shot, so sometimes you literally have to press the same thing twice to make it work. I don't know why. But here we are. So we are actually attaching to a node process that was not running with any debug flags, and because we're using the IDE and it knows the source code, it can map the source code for this application, it's also blocking it on literally like where it actually was in the application. Isn't that awesome? So it doesn't have to be sitting on localhost. It could be sitting on some cloud server somewhere. Now, you can debug using the node debug, built-in debug tools. You can use Node Inspector, or with Visual Studio Code or any other IDE, you can generally attach to running node processes as well. Okay, so how many of you guys have heard this before? Pretty much everyone, right? If you build anything for the web, you typically have people coming up to you saying, my website doesn't work on my machine, and I don't know why, right? So, I mean, it would be awesome if you could debug JavaScript in remote browsers, right? So I'm here to tell you you can do that. You're supposed to be shocked at this statement. What do you mean I could debug browsers that are not on my own machine? So luckily, there's a tool called Vorlon.js that lets you do precisely that. Vorlon is this open source, extensible, platform agnostic tool. Lots of words, but basically means that it works everywhere and runs with every single browser. And it lets you remotely debug and test JavaScript code. And it has a bunch of plugins that lets you sort of take some things from those browsers. You can see the console, for example. You can run Modernizer. How many of you guys use Modernizer, the JavaScript library? Pretty much everyone. Now, with this plugin, you're actually able to see what Modernizer is reporting. Okay, so you're able to see, like, hey, this browser that you're using that you told me is your latest version of like whatever doesn't actually have WebSockets, and that's why my website is failing. Right? So if you're working with clients or someone who has multiple machines, or you're using old machines, or you're even using machines that you don't have physical access to, like it could be a website that's running on some terminal in an airport or something. With this, you're actually able to debug those browsers without having to actually physically have access to the machine. And that's what's really powerful about Vorlon. So let me actually show you how to get started with Vorlon. It's quite simple. It's just a node module. So all you do is npm install Vorlon, and then you run Vorlon. That's it. That's all you need to do. Now, if you did that, though, you're only running a local host version of Vorlon. So it's only just sitting on my own machine, right? The next step to actually connect your website to Vorlon is to add this little script that just basically says, insert this the Vorlon.js file. So let me actually show you what that looks like. So what I'm going to do is, again, I'm going to do some more live demos. I'm so brave today. So I actually don't need this anymore, but I will keep it open anyways. This I don't need, but this I do. You guys can read this? It's okay? No, it's still being hidden by the curtain? Okay, how about now? It's good? All right. Okay, so let's say that I have this application. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be a Node application. It could be a PHP application. I'll double check that I have my Vorlon sitting in my little script thing, sitting in my Jade file. Jade is a template language for HTML. It's a very popular one among the Node community. So all it does is just inject this localhost Vorlon.js file. So if I have Vorlon running right here, okay, and it's going to tell me something went wrong. So here's the problem that I did not foresee having. So I'll skip that part and actually show you what it looks like when it's running in production. So let's say that you wanted to use Vorlon to remote debug. Okay. So what you'd have to do is just deploy Vorlon to some public server. It's just a Node application. All right, so you can actually run it on a platform as a service. You can run it on Azure. You could run it on AWS. You can run it on pretty much anywhere. And then from there, the minute that it's publicly accessible, you can actually inject the Vorlon script by linking to your actual website. So I've already done that. So I'm going to do a public Vorlon.js. And what I'm going to ask most of you guys to do is actually go take your browsers, whether it's on a phone, it's on a laptop, whatever, and visit bit.ly/jsopendemo. Okay, while you're doing that, I'm actually going to go to the Vorlon dashboard. So this will be your first demo of Vorlon. This is basically what the web page looks like. This is what Vorlon looks like. The nice thing is I can actually identify which client is running. So who is number two? Raise your hand. Actually look on your phones. Yeah. who's number two? Or three, or four, or five? Okay, you're three. Awesome. Okay, so what I'm actually doing is I'm actually debugging, once Vorlon makes a solid connection, is I'm actually examining her device. Okay. Now, if you don't believe me that this is working, I'm actually going to have another tab. Just put it up here on the side. Okay, and then I'm going to have my Vorlon tab right here. And I'm going to go to the same page that I just made you guys go to. Okay. Okay, here we go. All right, so if you're wondering what's actually happening, if I press identify a client, what it's doing is basically this ability to debug other people's browsers, assuming anything loads, which it won't right now. Instead, I will point you to the Vorlon.js page, where I promise there's a video of this if the internet loads. Oh, there it is. Okay. Because it's too hard for me to do an actual live demo, I'm going to run this one-minute video. So here we are. This is what I was hoping to do. So he's opened up the Vorlon page, his actual website, with basically, and it could be running on a mobile device, doesn't matter where. He's just running a website that has this Vorlon.js script injected into it. This is all public, by the way. It's running on an Azure website. When he clicks identify client, what it's doing is it's actually putting these numbers, which some of you saw when the internet was good, and the rest of you don't. The other nice thing that it lets you do is it also lets you explore the DOM. So by clicking on things, if I say click client one, then I click an element, it'll actually highlight it in the page. So when someone's asking you, they're saying, hey, this thing is not working, you can just click on the element. Are you talking about this button or this button? Right, so you no longer have to deal with like descriptions of things that are not working. And the other thing is that you can actually run JavaScript on people's browsers as well. So let's say that I was doing this console logging. It'll also show up on my console in Vorlon.js. So I can basically run a bunch of different things. And that's enough of this video. Instead, I will rely on my slide to tell you what else it can also do. Besides being able to see the errors in the console that's running in someone else's browser, you can see you can use Modernizer. You can see the DOM Explorer that he just used. You can explore JavaScript variables using a tree. That's the Object Explorer panel. You can see any AJAX calls that are being done. So it'll actually hijack the browser's networking stacks to see like what the AJAX request this person's browser is doing. There's a special plugin for Angular if you're an Angular developer. You're able to actually inspect your Angular scopes directly through Vorlon and monitor the network and see what resources are available, like cookies and local storage. And that's really handy if you're wondering like why this person's login behavior is not working. And it could be because they have some silly browser extension that deletes all their cookies. I don't know if anyone has ever actually experienced that, but that could happen and has happened to me. Other tools that are really useful. Vantage is another one that lets you basically connect directly to a live Node app and run a CLI tool. So it's like a mixture of a CLI tool and a REPL tool, and it runs over SSH. So hopefully now we can say that you've fixed bug in code without creating new bugs, right? Okay. I had some demos that worked and others that required internet that did not work. I'm sorry for that. So what did we learn? The types and errors and locations in JavaScript. Some of the debugging and introspection tools, like Visual Studio Code, the browser tools, Node Inspector, how to remote debug Node processes that are running. So think of using Node Inspector or the Node debug, built-in Node debug tools, or VS Code to debug running applications sitting on someone else's server. And finally, we also saw how to remote debug front-end JavaScript using Vorlon.js. So now, my friends, sail the unexplored territories of JavaScript debugging with more faith and better tools like Node Inspector. Thank you very much.